accession number 20599, reel 2.
Mr. Witswell, reel 2.
Well, the few Americans consisted of a unit, and I can't remember what they were in charge of, but there weren't very many of them, and we made friends with a very pleasant and obviously highly educated sergeant, and I remember asking him about his officer, and he said, "Oh well, my officer was a West Point character, and he doesn't talk to anybody." But otherwise they were very friendly. But there was it isn't always appreciated what an enormous amount of time, however active in retrospect a war seems to have been, one had absolutely nothing to do at all. And it was a question of finding little jobs of one thing and another. That Christmas 43 was a particularly futile, really, because we didn't know what was going to happen to us, and there was nothing to be done except get mildly drunk. I did quite a lot of painting in a mild way. I'm a sort of landscape artist of a fairly straightforward kind. And I drew pictures of flowers and trees and occasionally of people and sent various sketches home and one thing and another. Otherwise, we just devised exercises for ourselves, sometimes of a sort of military kind. We also had a shot. There were quite a lot of wild boar about the place, and we tried hunting wild boar with Tommy guns and other unlikely weapons. We did manage to slay a wild boar and cook it and eat it to our great pleasure. But as I say, there wasn't a great deal to do until finally, as I put it, I forget the actual preliminaries to this. We sailed for Italy in a French cruiser called the Fantasque, which had been acquired, if that's the right phrase, by the Allies at Oran earlier on, when we took quite a lot of French shipping in order to stop it falling into Vichy and possibly German hands.
Did you sail from Oran?
Yes, I suppose we did sail from Oran, and we landed in Naples, I think on a sunken hospital ship as a sort of key. And we got ourselves together and marched up to grubby and an extraordinarily interesting little town called Sessa Aurunca, and from there, by this time as fully operational as we could be, we got across the little Garigliano River, I forget exactly how, and went up into the mountains there, or hills, with instructions to try to get across, if you can imagine a map with Italy going like that and going through far north, to outflank Cassino. There's already been two battles at Cassino, and the second, and really rather disastrous one, they took in a lot of tanks and things, which all got, or most of which got bogged down or destroyed by the Germans who were on the hills above the town. The result that the the way into the town was virtually blocked and useless. So the object of going into the hills, rather to the east of this, was to try and cut across. And I remember I had instructions it was my turn to be leading platoon of leading company. And our intelligence can't have been very good, because it was thought that we'd be able to get across there fairly easily. And it so happened the place was absolutely stiff with Germans. So instead of fighting an offensive battle, we fought a defensive one. The place was full of Germans, and we happened to kill rather a lot of them.
What is the name of this place?
Well, the battle itself, I think, became known as Monte Ornito, O-R-N-I-T-O. Monte Ornito in February 1944.
And which platoon and company was yours?
Your interrogation is beginning to be too much for my memory, but I think I was in number four company at that time, and I think it may have been it may have been 16 platoon, but we were all in it together. And lots of us won decorations, which I think we all regarded as really being due not to us personally, but to everybody. I got an MC for this. My platoon sergeant got an MM. The padre of the battalion got an MC, I think, as well. And there was lots of fighting there anyway.
What was the terrain like there?
Tremendously hilly and rocky. I remember crouching behind some rocks, clutching one of those. What is the proper name for them? Those glass containers and things with the company rum ration in it. Luckily, it was not broken.
Not a carboy.
Well, almost. Yes, I think it. I think it almost was. And we sort of took it in turns to have fighting patrols out towards the Germans to see what they were at. And I and one or two of my colleagues in either the battalion or the brigade, some of the battalion sort of switched over from time to time, made little fighting patrols out to see how the land lay. And it was in fact in the course of that I won my military cross, because we went out there and we found a lot of Germans and we captured them and brought them back.
What can you remember about that incident?
Well, I chiefly remember the being irritated by the German officer, who was a sort of my equivalent, I suppose, any sort of platoon commander. Or whatever the German equivalent was, and he insisted on standing about in no man's land, complaining that it wasn't right that I should demand his own revolver off him, and that as an officer and a gentleman he was entitled to keep it or something. So I more or less said, well, damn that, you get back with the rest of them. But that was the sort of thing that happened.
So you took it off him?
Yes, I took it off.
But can you tell me about the fighting on that occasion?
Well, not really. I mean, one didn't see a great deal. I remember there was one chap who was unfortunately killed. It was you must imagine a rocky sort of terrain. You kind of hid behind these things, and sometimes you could see people, and sometimes you couldn't. And I don't think we had many casualties, but there was one. There was a guardsman, I suppose he was, or a corporal, who was killed. And then when the when the Germans had, we pushed the Germans out of there, and we had a bit of a pause. Eventually, we came down ourselves and out for a bit, but this chap had to be buried, and I said, well, we'd better get the battalion padre up, and so we got him up, and he nearly said his thing over the thing, and then he went back. And when a few days later we all came back and had a bit of a rest, having been relieved by somebody else, I said, what happened to the padre? And they said, oh, after you'd done with him, he had a nervous breakdown. but anyway, that, I mean, you know, this is all very sort of, but nothing much to it.
And how much did you know about the Germans who were opposing you, such as what unit they belonged to?
On this occasion, I think we did have information about that, which I personally, as a platoon commander, I've rather forgotten. Later on, of course, I became enormously interested in that, because having got back, I then had with a colleague, I had a few days leave, and we went and stayed down on the coast near Positano, Ravello, or somewhere there. I was promoted captain about then. I was a fairly senior subaltern. Now, well, wait a minute, I think you better...
Maybe if I can just ask you one or two more questions.
Turn it off for a bit. Mm.
When you were at this Monte Oneto, were the Germans on higher ground or lower ground than you were?
Sort of level to begin with, we pushed them off. If you can imagine, I mean, it perhaps wasn't as easily defined as this, but if you imagine Monte Oneto as itself being a little mountain, a little hill anyway, we pushed them off that, and there was in fact a much higher mountain further on called Monte Caro, and I think they were probably up there. I know that much later in the war, eventually the French Moroccans, the Goumier, got through there, but I'm not absolutely certain there were a lot of Germans on Monte Caro. After all, there weren't all that number of Germans, and I think they'd probably pulled back, but for that particular battle, there did seem to be quite a lot of them. But I think that the numbers that we killed probably pushed them back a bit. And after these particular things, there was a sort of holding force put in to keep the line. And I'm not sure, it must have been fairly soon after that, that the French came in instead of the British. And we pulled back a bit to get ready to go in round the corner, as it were, to our right, in the casino direction. But meanwhile, with the difficulty of reinforcing and the need to have some sort of a new base camp for people to go back to that wasn't in one of these increasingly bombed and difficult towns, we made a little camp that we could get back to out of battle in a village called San Petito Sannitico, on the edge of the Abruzzi hills, and that was an extremely attractive place, and I was looked after a little camp there for a bit until we moved forward again. But I can't really remember all the details of this. And one of the difficulties was, as I say, that we were rather short of men, and I was originally going to be the second in command of a company, and then in fact the company was never formed. And so I looked after this camp for a bit, and then I came up, for much of the next, sort of several months, really, my job was not as a platoon commander anymore, but as what was called a liaison officer with brigade. In other words, I was at brigade headquarters, representing the battalion, or rather feeding back to the battalion the news I got from brigade, which was a higher formation, and so, you know, tell them what was going on.
Can I just go back to Monte Arnito? What impression had the Germans there created on you as a fighting force?
I don't think any... Well, we always thought the Germans were very good fighting soldiers. I think we were up against fairly good divisions. There was a Hermann Göring division, and there was one that was called something else, and I forget what. But you see, it was quite soon after that after a bit of relaxation and going back to the coast for the odd, a colleague of mine and I stayed in a hotel that had once been a monastery in the sort of Ravello direction on the Italian coast there, and then we went up, as it were, into the line again. And this time it was more or less into Cassino itself. There's an outlying hill called Monte Trocchio, and you can sort of get up behind that, and then you have to watch out. So if you get beyond Monte Trocchio, the Germans up above Cassino town. And further on, of course, right back, the monastery, the famous Monte Cassino monastery, is further back and still further up. Of course, overlooked everything, so they were down, as it were, and we were up. But the Cassino town itself had in earlier battles been completely wrecked. And where we got in was what was known as the crypt, which was a great brick undercroft, beautifully built, of a huge Renaissance church of, I suppose, the 16th century probably, which was just, of course, an enormous pile of bricks. We worked in there for a long time and had to watch out very carefully. The Poles were also up in the hills there, General Anders's Poles, and there was a sort of nearer ridge with a sort of wall and castle and things going up. I think the Welsh Guards looked after that, and we could only get in and out of that by putting down a considerable smoke screen and going up the valley. And I think there was a certain amount of live and let live there, because while the Germans from up above could to a great extent see what we were doing, equally, we could see what they were doing, and we knew when they needed to get food supplies in. And I think that for a short time anyway, a few weeks possibly, or perhaps not as much, we appreciated that if we didn't stonk them, as we used to say, when they were getting they were getting their food, they wouldn't stonk us when we were trying to get ours. But it was when I was in there that I was first aware of the, if you like, the fanatical bravery of the Germans, because except for when there was lots of smoke about, and I think there was quite sort of breezy weather. I mean, smoke didn't last very long. The whole of that hill beyond Casino, the town itself having crumbled into the mud and filth at the bottom broken tanks and I mean the drainage had all gone and all that kind of thing. Endless croaking of frogs, I remember the entire time. But they, on the 20th of April, which of course was Hitler's birthday, they climbed out over the whole of that open hillside and draped two enormous swastika flags on it on the 20th of April.
How dangerous was it for them to do that?
Well, I mean, it's a toss up whether it would really have been worth our while to sort of stonk that. I mean, we'd only have killed half a dozen of them. We both had sort of snipers watching out. We from what remained of the various humps of buildings and above the crypt and everything else. But we had a company sergeant major shot who was in the sort of fragments of buildings above the crypt. And a German sniper must have been watching out tremendously carefully, and he showed himself for a second, and they shot him dead. So there was some quite skillful stuff going on there.
Any other memories from this occasion in April?
When did we get through? We got through in May, I suppose. I think... I mean, I don't remember in detail. It is, and I think I probably only wrote it down afterwards. I've got the war diaries, as I say, has I think been copied, but quite a lot of that time I was making friends with an Italian family who'd had their house deliberately destroyed by the Germans to block a road. And were living in considerable discomfort, and they had he was a doctor and his wife, and they had two young children, and I know they told me that the boy had been having piano lessons, and part of the furniture of a fighting battalion at that time was to have an Italian liaison officer attached to the battalion, who was a useful sort of chap in order to pick up things we wanted. I mean, and including, of course, a certain amount of food. The Italians were extraordinarily clever at hanging on to food supplies, and were quite generous we thought that her whole place was wrecked. I remember being invited to supper by an Italian family living in a sort of ruin, and I thought, well, should I take them? The waiting to take them, of course, was cigarettes, which I had, and I thought, should I give them some bully beef? And of course, I got one of the biggest meals I'd ever had in my life. They managed extremely well, and so I said to this Italian, do you think you'll get this Italian officer attached to us? I'd like to help this family if I can. I know the children have been learning the piano. Do you think you can liberate a piano for me? And then he said, yes, he thought he could, and he did. In theory, the piano belonged to some notorious fascist. He found somebody who pitched it. But who knows, that sort of thing was going on.
In what language did you speak with the Italian civilians?
Increasingly in a sort of dog Italian, but I had travelled in Italy before the war, but French or indeed English, no great difficulty in communicating with Italians. They were mocked at in some ways as a race of waiters, an awful lot of them spoke English. And there was started talking a certain amount of dog Italian, and I think I was always rather better at that. I can read Italian more or less.
Were there any problems working at Brigade?
Oh no, not really. I lived at Brigade, and I was also an SLA, which was a senior liaison officer, and I used to go back to the, or I can't remember where geographically, whether it was back or forward, or we were slowly. Slowly moving up Italy when we could. I mean, roads were blocked endlessly, and there were difficulties and diversions of one kind or another. And then you'd be left alone, and nothing would happen for days. We got up eventually, sort of past Rome. The thing was, the original plan was set back a little bit, or anyway, it altered. As far as we knew, General Alex's idea was that we should skirt Rome altogether, and certainly not go in there. But of course, the Americans were commanded by this chap, General Mark Clark, who had every sort of chip on his shoulder about everything, because he was in fact a more senior officer than Eisenhower. And he very much did what he fancied. And one of the things he fancied was to get himself photographed in Rome in order to show that the Americans had captured Rome, which was not part of the original Allied plan at all. We meant to leave it alone. But that was the sort of thing that happened. The other thing, of course, that was happening away from us, though I knew one or two of the people personally involved by chance, and then came back again, was the landing of Danzio, which was designed to make it easier for us to hop forward beyond Rome. And that got bogged down. There wasn't anybody there. We could have rushed straight forward to the main road. But the American general in charge, as far as I remember, was a chap called Lucas, was a sort of, in a way, I mean, without the success, if you like, was a sort of Monty. He was unbelievably cautious. He wouldn't move anywhere until he was certain that he had more troops than the enemy had and that he wasn't going to. And the result, the move forward was so slow that the Anzio bridgehead more or less got cut off and had to be kind of looked after independently. Instead of helping us.
What are your next personal memories from the time of the liberation of Rome?
Oh well, this was just a question then of sort of rushing on up. I mean, and there were various friends I had in brigade headquarters and everywhere else, but of course it was. It was also enormously interesting. There were these lovely old towns, Narni and Todi and various other places like that. And we were always, regardless of what happened before, for all I know, they may have had Germans for breakfast. Giving breakfast to the Germans. But by the time we came, there it was. flowers and drink and every kind of thing, and everyone embracing us, and lots to do and lots to look at. Come on, we've got to get on with things.